Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is our first ever one-hour commercial-free show in celebration of Earth Day. And in case you don't know, and I might invite you to think, why wouldn't you? April 22nd marks the anniversary of what many consider the birth of the modern environmental movement. It started in 1970. And when you think about it, if you're old enough, I'm an old hippie, so I am, it capitalized on the emerging consciousness and channeling the energy of what was then the anti-war protest movement and putting environmental concerns front and center. And I can tell you that some days I think we're making a lot of progress over the past 44 years, and other days I'm challenged to find out exactly where that is. But I am Mrs. Green, so here you go. It's always upbeat. So I have chosen a very intentional guest today for this inaugural show, and we'll ask her to talk about what I believe to be one of the biggest threats to our environment today. 44 years after the founding of Earth Day, the fashion and textile industries, of course, it's what I think, I have picked one of the best topics in the world to provide us with information about this vast sea of information and one of the best possible guests I could possibly have to share what she knows. Deeply and incredibly excited to welcome Marcy Zaroff. She is a powerful powerhouse. That's a redundancy. She has a powerful story to share about the difference that one person with a big idea can and is making for our world. It's my pleasure to welcome Marcy. She's the president of Portico Brands. She's founder of Under the Canopy and producer of the documentary Thread. And we're going to hear a lot more about that. Marcy's personal mission? My mission is to revolutionize the global fashion and textile industries, driving sustainability through creative vision, inspiration, education, collaboration, and innovation. So that is a warm welcome to Marcy. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Mrs. Green. It's a real pleasure to be here and celebrating one of my favorite days of the year.
It is. It's one of my favorite days of the year, too. So because it is Earth Day, and because we have done another wonderful show with you, I thought we'd take a little different slant today. And would you be willing to start with an overview of two things? First, paint us a picture of the landscape of the clothing / textile manufacturing industry and some of its unsustainable practices, and hopefully that will lead to what inspired you to become a global leader, to become the change that you really wanted to see in the fashion world.
Sure, great. Well, I think intuitively people probably know that fashion textiles have significant impacts on our environment, but have really never stopped to dissect what's really going on and pull the curtain back on the industry. As it turns out, you know, you've got about a $1 trillion industry out there, global industry, and it's the second largest polluter in the world, the textile industry, and you know, of course, a leading cause of both air and water pollution. So, you know, the thing that was so mind-blowing to me when I first got into this industry was that, you know, there's an interconnection in agriculture, and a lot of the fibers that we're actually using in textiles, you know, they come from nature, cotton as an example. And, you know, we've been led to believe that cotton is a natural fiber. I mean, most consumers think, oh, I'm wearing cotton, I'm wearing all natural fibers.
I feel so good. I'm 100% cotton. Yeah.
Exactly. But when you actually pull the curtain back on the cotton industry as it is today, first of all, you've got an industry, or cotton represents about 3% of the world's agriculture, but uses up to 20% of the most harmful insecticides and over 10% of the most toxic carcinogenic pesticides to grow. And then when you actually start doing the everything from the ginning to the processing and then the dyeing and the finishing, there is so much formaldehyde, heavy metals, acetones, chlorine bleaches, and other toxic chemicals added to the production of cotton that at the end of the day, you really aren't sitting with the natural fiber that people think it is. So I think my foray into this was that I had started on the food side, and, you know, the more I learned about organic agriculture and sort of natural foods, when I got exposed to the paradigm of organic agriculture, really, which is built on a methodology of crop rotation, I learned that cotton is a very important crop in that rotation. And if you're not supporting organic cotton, it's very hard to then justify supporting organic food, because there's a lot of interconnection. 60% of a cotton plant actually ends up in our food stream for cottonseed oil and other, and for seed, for dairy products. So if you're eating organic dairy, you actually need organic cotton. So that started the ball rolling for me. But then as I dove deeper and I started to learn about all of the other human and environmental impacts of fashion and fiber and textiles that relating to chemical use, you know, pesticides, but other chemicals, as I mentioned, including waste and water and energy issues, labor impacts, social justice issues. And I started to really, you know, understand the magnitude and multitude of these impacts. Then it was for me a matter of, wait a minute, this is a massive industry that needs a paradigm shift. Why is nobody focusing on this? And so in 1995, I coined the term eco-fashion, really to fuse what at the time were two very paradoxical worlds together, to take the whole idea of, you know, being mindful and conscious and caring about our environment and humanitarian issues, and fusing that with fashion, which is actually a very powerful vehicle for change, because everybody relates to it. Everybody buys clothing, everybody buys bedding and towels, and so, you know, almost 24 hours a day we're wearing fiber and textiles. And what people don't know is that, you know, when you start to look at those impacts, as an example, textile waste occupies over 5% of all of our landfill space. You know, the average consumer is throwing away about 68 pounds of clothing per year. You know, there's over a million tons of textiles thrown out every year. So the waste issue is pretty significant. Then you look at the water issue. You know, 20% of industrial fresh water pollution comes from textile treatment and dyeing. You know, you look at the amount of water the textile industry is using, over 3 trillion gallons of fresh water a year. I mean, one cotton T-shirt takes about 700 gallons of water, fresh water, to make one T-shirt. You know, and then you look at energy use. 10% of the global carbon impact in the world comes from the global textile industry. Over a trillion kilowatt hours are used per year in the production of textiles. So there's just, you know, there's so many, the ramifications of the textile industry are significant. And so that, for me, full circle here, was the catalyst that said, okay, you know, my mission is to revolutionize the industry.
And you're doing it. And when you talk about, I met you at the Go Green Conference in New York. And, you know, here I am, Mrs. Green, showing up at the party, feeling late to the party, because I felt as though, you know, I'm a highly enlightened human being about, you know, the ecology and the impact. The numbers that you bring up are devastating. I mean, they are shocking to me. I don't think people, the regular consumer, let alone someone like me, has any clue about the devastating effects. Now, I want to segue to when you bring out all those numbers, okay, and you have such firepower behind the arguments for eco-fashion, let's go through a little bit of what changes when you're moving from, let's just say, a T-shirt to a certified organic T-shirt, and include in that, if you don't mind, the human capital, because you're very much about the impact it has on human beings as well. It's not just the environment and our water supply and what we're putting on our bodies, which can harm us. Literally harm us, because there's stuff that leaches onto my body. So talk about when you go. It's skipping a little bit, but since we're on that thread, when you talk about the textile industry, move us through the change that can be if we're talking about a more sustainable way to, manufacture and produce clothing that has a conscience.
Yeah, so you brought up cotton, so I'll start with organic cotton. So certified organic cotton is grown free of all pesticides, insecticides, and chemicals. It is guaranteed to be grown using non-GMO or genetically modified seeds, so there's no GMO seeds. And by the way, over 90% of the cotton being grown in the world right now is being grown with genetically modified seeds, which is a huge risk to the long-term viability of the cotton industry as are an incredible natural plant. When you look at the chain of command from an organic textile, as an example, it starts obviously at the farm level. And I will say, because most consumers don't realize this, if it is not certified organic, then don't trust it being organic. Organic is not a marketing proposition. It is a federally regulated methodology that is governed by the USDA as an agricultural product. I happen to be on the board of directors of the Organic Trade Association, which governs all organic products in the United States, food, beauty products, fiber. And so it must be certified organic by a third-party accredited certifier to be called organic cotton. But when you take the cotton and then you turn it into a textile, of course, it goes through many different steps in that process. And the average fashion retailer in this country actually is buying from either, a wholesaler or a factory that's giving them what we call a package price,
right,
like a one-stop shop on pricing. And
right,
what consumers don't realize is that, a garment can change hands 7 to 10 times in the supply chain,
wow,
from the field to the finished product. So, when we look at this and we get in the trenches on creating a vertically integrated supply chain that is transparent, that is authentic, that is certified, we look at every step in that chain from the impact of the farmers, which, as you mentioned, goes beyond the fact that, in most countries in the world where cotton's being grown, farmers are not educated, and many of them are women, by the way, and they're walking through their farmlands with pesticide tanks on their back because they grow cotton manually, and many times they have babies in slings on their fronts, and they don't know that they're spraying these poisonous chemicals, right in the faces of their own children. And so from a physical, human health standpoint, it's horrible. And then you look at what we call the pesticide treadmill. From the social standpoint, the companies like Monsanto lure these farmers into their GMO seeds, telling them they're going to get better yields. And what happens is that, in that first year when they're using, the lower dose of the pesticides with the GMO seeds, it's kind of a package, there's a short-term, very, very short-term gain. But what happens is they get caught on what we call the pesticide treadmill. And what happens is then the bugs start to build resistance to these new sprays.
Right,
and
right,
the sprays have to get stronger, and the farmers then have to go and buy more expensive, heavier doses of pesticides and chemical sprays, which of course they can't afford, and they end up leveraging their farms to the very companies and banks that are, giving them the seeds in the first place. And so in the meantime, they're killing the ecosystems and of the soil. The bugs get out of control. The farmers are going into despair, and many of them are committing suicide now. Cotton farmers around the world, specifically in India, people can go and Google these stories. Every half an hour right now, a conventional cotton farmer is committing suicide.
Mercy, you're
by
kidding.
Actually by drinking pesticides. Because they're in a state of, this is just not a sustainable paradigm anymore. It's really sad. So, this isn't just, again, buying organic textiles is not about, just a, feel good from the standpoint of it's better for our own skin, which, of course, the skin is the largest organ in our body
right,
and the primary organ for absorption. But, people's lives are being affected. Our clothing does not grow in our department stores here, which American consumers often think, they forget. People's lives are being affected.
And I want to, speechless because I didn't have any idea that the rates of suicide were that devastating. And one of the things, just my little rant is, I must have missed that on any of the major news stations because it's not being reported anywhere in the United States of America, I guarantee it, except on Mrs. Green's World regularly, but it's very, very pejorative to me. It makes me incredibly sad. But let's go through a couple of the words, because studying what you have done and really doing my homework, you choose your words very carefully on everything that you've written, on presentations you've done. So talk to us about what does it mean to be transparent, to be authentic, and then talk a little bit about the true label that you can work to achieve that says fair trade, because that is a very powerful combination of words to me. So what is transparency? What is authenticity? Tell us about fair trade.
Sure. So one of the big stigmas in buying an organic or a sustainable or an eco-friendly or an ethical, however you want to call it, textile, is, well, how do I know? How do I know that what I'm buying really is making a difference? And that's where authenticity and transparency are paramount. As an example, if you're buying an organic textile, it for many years was kind of a wild west out there, and people were slapping the word organic on, you know, on their on clothing, you know, manufacturers and designers, because they really didn't understand what it meant. But there is now a global organic textile standard, which is called the GOTS standard. Again, it's an acronym for Global Organic Textile Standard. And this is the platinum standard, it is the equivalent to if someone were to go buy an organic food product and see the USDA's National Organic Program seal, that organic seal that you see on food.
Right.
We cannot use that seal on a textile because it does not include dyes and finishes in those allowances, the 5% allowances that food products get. So therefore, we have our own equivalent to that standard, which is the GOTS standard, which has been embraced by the USDA as that equivalent to the food standard. So again, it's the GOTS standard. So if you're looking and buying an organic textile, that's what to look for. Then we have, and it does take into account, by the way, not just the cotton itself, but everything along the supply chain, including the dyes and finishes, only allows for low-impact dyes, which have less than a 5% runoff to the environment versus a 60% runoff with conventional dyes. Again, no chlorine bleaches and no formaldehyde, which is very toxic, no acetones, no heavy metals. So it's all the finishes and dyes as well. And then, you know, you talk about fair trade. Well, fair trade, you know, in the GOTS standard, of course, inherently is a fair labor standard built into GOTS, which does include no child labor and fair working conditions. And there's a lot of social compliance standards out there that some of the big brands and retailers are now, you know, doing social audits at their factories worldwide. But the elephant in the room that nobody talks about is the wage issue. And what we've seen is that workers worldwide and farmers worldwide really can't sustain their livelihoods anymore. Prices have been pushed down so hard and so far by the fast fashion and big mass market retailers that, you know, even though their margins are growing, the farmers and the workers are the ones who are suffering. And literally, you know, you hear farmers and workers making less than $37 a month to support families of, you know, 4, 5, 6 people. They can't even put food on the table. So, you know, this is where we need to start looking at humanity as our brothers and sisters and saying, you know, social justice is a very important part of the equation in, you know, kind of redefining and shifting the paradigm of the fashion industry. We have to look at, you know, the people that are growing and sewing our clothing to make sure that they also can sustain their livelihoods. So Fair Trade Certified, which is a new certification, and I was not only on the team of people that helped write the GOTS standard, but also on the team of people that wrote the first Fair Trade Textile Standard for the U.S. And this is in partnership with Fair Trade USA, the same organization that certifies coffee and chocolate and bananas. And, you know, when you see the Fair Trade Certified logo on those other products, now you're going to start to see that Fair Trade Certified logo on textile products. And what that does is it looks at, of course, same thing with the, you know, typical social compliance, no child labor and the fair working conditions, but it does address the wage issue and it guarantees living wages for workers and farmers instead of just minimum wages that they can barely scrape by on.
And the when you said it, you know, sometimes a piece of clothing, I think this is what you said, changes hands 7 times before it gets on my body. So that's the markup and the markup and the markup and the markup. So the bottom of the food chain gets the least, right?
That's correct.
That's where it
that's
happens.
Correct. So, yeah, I mean, transparency across, you know, all areas of the fashion and textile industry is really kind of the way of the future. I mean, now with the internet, consumers can pull the curtain back, and they should, and learn about the brands you're supporting and the products that you're buying and, you know, and who's making your clothes. In fact, there's now, which is a very fortunate for this show, is that, you know, it coincides with April 24th, which is the first ever Fashion Revolution Day. And Fashion Revolution Day is a global collaboration and effort to ignite and catalyze consumers around revolutionizing fashion and asking the question, who made your clothes? You know, what
I
is,
love it.
What is inside of your clothes?
It's like, know your farmer, only who made your clothes?
Yeah, I mean, this Thursday, and I'm, you know, again, April 24th, and this is the anniversary of the Rana Plaza tragedy that happened in Bangladesh last year, April 24th, 2013, where 1,133 workers lost their lives making fashion and textiles for fast fashion brands and retailers here in the U.S. and in Europe. And so in honor of those victims and victims from all over the world who are making our clothing, we now are starting a fashion revolution. 50 different countries around the world have signed up for Fashion Revolution Day. This is just the beginning. So people can visit fashionrevolution.org to learn more and hashtag inside out. And there's contests going on to post you wearing your clothes inside out on April 24th in honor of, you know, joining this movement.
But the good thing is that when we tweet and Facebook and stuff about the show, especially Twitter, we can use that. I've already told my team about Inside Out because you talked about it, and I didn't catch the foodrevolution.org. So there's time, and that's probably probably why we're doing another show. Okay, fashionrevolution.org.
Right.
So where is this clothing? Where is the clothing that I can go and buy? People on a budget, and to me, people say, I do it because it's cheaper, which I defy you to prove that to me. Cheap clothes wear out, and you have to replace more quickly, and they're awful. So I don't think cheaper is better. Buy one piece of good clothing and keep it. Where do people go and buy eco-friendly fashion, eco-fashion conscious clothing?
Yeah, so it's exciting. I mean, the industry's come a very long way since I started. And, you know, when I started Under the Canopy, we were direct-to-consumer through mail order catalog, and because retailers weren't ready to embrace eco-fashion. Fortunately now, because the movement has taken root and consumers are asking for this and lots of great efforts are going on behind the scenes, there are some wonderful online retailers that have emerged. And there also are some, you know, mainstream retailers now that are jumping on board this bandwagon. So as an example, and it goes from the fast fashion all the way to the high-end retailers. So you can find organic and sustainable textiles at retailers such as even Barney's or Nordstrom. You can find fast fashion, an amazing collection actually at H&M now. It's called the Conscious Collection. And it's all organic and sustainable fibers and manufacturing. In fact, Amber Valletta, who is a dear friend, supermodel and actress, and my co-producer of the Thread documentary and Driving Fashion Forward series, she's the new face of H&M's Conscious Collection that just released this month.
That's awesome. And I did find things about her, and she's gorgeous. And, of course, if anybody looks, they'll know who she is. She's a very famous actress.
Yeah, wonderful, amazing woman. And then if people want, you know, organic bedding, fashion bedding, Under the Canopy and Portico, the brands I run are located at bedbathandbeyond.com and dillards.com, neimanmarcus.com, and in stores as well. So, you know, really exciting across all textile categories, from apparel to bedding and home textiles. And then there's some great websites. Amber herself actually has curated a phenomenal site called masterinmuse.com. You have modavanti.com, which is another wonderful site that has over 100 eco-fashion brands. You have shopethica.com,
wow,
which also has curated incredible product. You have revinvert.com. So there's lots of great sources now to find, you know, eco-fashion, both on a brick-and-mortar level as well as online.
Okay, and then when you get down to the, fair trade, how does it, and the certification process, that always mystifies me. So are there a team of, global representatives that are educated on the process? Do they literally go and do on-site inspections, or can you analyze a t-shirt and see if it's been tainted by insecticides? How does that process for someone like GOTS work?
Oh, yeah. Well, there are certifiers worldwide, companies like Control Union and IMO that are actually, that's what they do. They're a third-party accredited agencies, and they go out, and of course, Fairtrade USA also works with partners on the ground in various countries that go into the factories. They do, pretty comprehensive audits. There are annual audits as well. They do a track and trace. So in a GOTS certified textile, not only does the factory itself have to be GOTS certified, same with a fair trade certified textile, but the actual transaction, the production itself has to be certified so that you know that not only is that product being made in a certified factory, but the product itself can be tracked and traced from the farm to its finished product. So if you were buying a GOTS textile and you saw the GOTS label on a t-shirt, as an example, you would be able to say to that manufacturer, that brand, hey, I want to see the farm this was grown on,
right,
and the
right.
factory that this was made in, and it's all traced along the entire supply chain.
And you can't just do it. Like if you see USDA certified, I've had people on my show, you don't have to think about it. It's a no-brainer. You can just buy it because you cannot get through that rigorous certification process without, crossing every T and dotting every I. So that's, it gives me a lot of hope. Let's talk a little bit about the Thread documentary. You have two shorts out and the full-length one will be out next year. Yes?
Yep. So we have been working on this documentary for a little while, and it's a team of Michelle Vay, who's the original partner on this, and now we have Lila Connors, who is our new director with Tree Media. Lila directed The 11th Hour with Leonardo DiCaprio. Amber Valletta and her partner Amy Johnson, we are all just co-creating this incredible film that is unveiling the human and environmental impacts of fashion, but doing it through a very positive and exciting lens of all of the incredible solutions that are out there today. So we started bringing out a series of shorts in partnership with Lexus, who we're very grateful to, who's been our title sponsor of the shorts. And right now, two of the shorts have already been released. There are two more being released this month in April. And if viewers want to go watch these shorts, they're fabulous. They're on Lexus's online program called L Studio. So if you go to lstudio.com,
okay,
you can look up Amber Valletta Driving Fashion Forward series. And the first two pieces that we've released, one is called Thread, which really lays the foundation and the groundwork for the fibers and the textiles that we're using. The second short we just released is called Timelessness, which does talk about what you brought up earlier about buying clothing that can last. And quality is so important when we're buying textiles. We want them to be sustainable. That is a very important pillar in sustainability. And we are featuring Diane von Furstenberg in that short.
Talk about Throwback Thursday. I mean, I used to wear Diane von Furstenberg dresses when I worked on Wall Street in like the early 70s.
Well, that's the thing. Her wrap dress has been going on for decades. So it's, she's a great person to speak about timelessness in fashion.
Yes, yes. I probably have them somewhere in a trunk. They were the kind of things that you could just kind of put on today. So I get excited when I talk to you. And then I think about one of my favorite books ever is Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. Mm-hmm. Do you think that can we hope for a tipping point with the fashion industry? Because it is so pervasive. I use the word filthy fashion, which I don't like to. But I mean, when I left the presentation that you did in New York, I was very, very shaken to my core. I was authentically, transparently shaken because I was crying my eyes out. So were my two daughters. And so you have a very global view and you've been doing this a long time. Are we closer to a tipping point in getting rid of the $5 T-shirts that were literally made by slaves, probably the 12 million people that are living in slavery right now as we speak on the air?
Yeah, well, I have to say, I have never been more encouraged and excited
yes.
as I am now. You know, I have spent, close to 20 years, you know, really pioneering and driving this industry from the ground, you know, rolling my sleeves up, taking on, you know, in these early years, it was really very paradoxical trying to fuse, you know, fashion with ecology. They were kind of dichotomous concepts, right? But now there's so much incredible engagement out there and positive engagement from the millennial generation they care about what they're buying. I mean, you can look at the phenomena of a Tom's Shoes where social innovation is a powerful
perfect example.
Platform and tool now. You look at the celebrities that are getting behind eco-fashion and the models. In fact, the fourth short that we're going to be coming out with for Driving Fashion Forward has Christy Turlington in it.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, a lot of these supermodels are really stepping up and celebrities like Jessica Alba and, you know, just really now, you know, taking a stand to speak about, you know, again, more conscious fashion and consumer products. So what we're also seeing is a lot of positive efforts on the back end. So you have the textile exchange that is bringing the entire supply chain together, which I'm on the board of, and I'm really proud to say that, you know, we've seen the organic cotton industry grow from a, you know, $200 million industry in 2002 to, you know, an $8 billion industry in 2012. I mean, so, you know, enormous growth through a global collaboration. You've got the HIG Index, which is part of the Sustainable Apparel Coalition, which represents over 85% of the world's largest apparel producers coming together to create a way to measure impacts in the apparel supply chain. You have the Clean Clothes Campaign. You have the Organic Cotton Accelerators and Coalitions. You have the Brooklyn Fashion Accelerator that's now empowering young designers to look at sustainable fashion as the new foundation for fashion. Teens Turning Green out there educating, you know, high school and college kids all over the country about organic clothing and sustainable fashion. The Fashion Group International with, you know, looking at sustainability. The CFDA looking at sustainability and creating committees to infuse, you know, conscious fashion. I mean, it's amazing the things going on both on the front end and the back end. And between, you know, those efforts, when those dots start connecting, which is what's happening now, we're going to see that very tipping point.
We're activating there. The matrix, as I feel. It's like, okay,
right.
Yes, and I just see pieces of it light up. So it's very, very exciting. Tell me what you think, your actual honest opinion of how do we stack up as a country with other countries? I know in the cosmetics industry, we are pathetic, as my niece would say, pathetic, because she'd say, Aunt Gina, it's pathetic, because the standards are so much lower here. I always say, yeah, we get the sludge and the waste and the lowest quality product to put in as cheap fillers in things we rub on our faces. And in Germany and France and Italy, there's a gold standard. They wouldn't consider having some of these ingredients in their nail polishes, let alone their facial, you know, and skincare products. How do we stand up, and are we emerging as global leaders in eco-fashion and the textile industry? Give us your report card.
Yeah, well, you know, the beauty of America is actually we're great marketers, right? So,
true.
You know, a lot of these concepts, they start overseas. And we draw inspiration from these efforts. Because, so, you know, in Europe, as an example, sustainability, conscious living, organic food and agriculture, I mean, they're built into the system. You know, they're you know, in the Scandinavian countries, you know, your taxes are based on, you know, how fuel efficient your car is and
right.
how much recycling you do. So, you know, we are learning, but then we take these movements, and especially with the power of media and celebrity, which really a lot of that is drawn from the U.S., we can then take these movements to new levels. And I think what's happening is, while the organic food and fashion and ethical fashion movements have been much stronger overseas, and particularly in the U.K. is where the ethical fashion movement really has probably been strongest, we then, when we bring them over here, we're able to up the ante on the new noise level. So, for instance, the Ethical Fashion Forum, which is an incredible collaboration in the UK of designers and brands and manufacturers and, you know, retailers, has now started to penetrate the U.S. And we're, this Fashion Revolution Day, which did start in the U.K., has now, like I said, you know, kicked off in 50 countries and including the U.S. And I think we're, you know, we're making some great progress here in the U.S. in terms of catalyzing consumers and joining forces all of those who've been pioneers and champions for the movement. But, you know, when we look at the work that still needs to be done, I mean, of course, there's tremendous work that still needs to be done. I mean, I can tell you, you know, in China, you can tell what colors the factories are dyeing by the colors of the rivers and things like that, where Americans are so far removed from what those impacts are. And one of the reasons that the movement has been bigger in other countries to start is because they're more in touch with the farmland. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, Americans think that their clothing is growing in their department store, you know, or fast fashion store. They don't realize that, you know, that what goes into our products and how products are made are affecting people's lives, because we're a little further removed from farms and from our own environment, you know. And so what's happened is that, you know, their child defects are huge in China now. Birth defects. There's so many spillover issues that are going on, and you know, and when you look at the stars in Hong Kong as an example, you know, unless the textile factories are closed, you see almost no stars in the sky because of the amount of pollution.
I was going to say, good luck looking at the stars in Hong Kong. It's like, and make sure you're wearing a mask. Yes.
You know, those very things that we take for granted here.
But
having said that, because the organic food movement is growing and, you know, and the natural food movement and personal care and some of these other categories have really started to take off, and you have, you know, companies like Whole Foods, which have grown from, you know, just a handful of stores to 370 stores, and they've recently announced that their goal is to be 1,200 stores over the next handful of years. And so, you know, the more awareness that starts to penetrate deeper into our mainstream culture, the more people are waking up and that seed is getting planted. And once people have a seed of consciousness, it's inevitable that they say, what else? What's next? And so the evolution from food into fiber is a natural next step. And people are open to it. It makes sense to them, but they don't know that it's out there. And probably the biggest roadblock of a sustainable textile is that the accessibility is still the big missing link, that consumers still are saying, okay, I've learned about this, it makes sense, I get it, I want to be a part of this movement, I want to support organic and sustainable fashion and home textiles, where do I find it? And that's what we're really looking at now, and I think that's where we're going to see the biggest difference.
And it's really not that easy. I mean, we did a Kickstarter recently, and one of the things we offered, because I did a lot of research, people like T-shirts. So needless to say, if I was doing a T-shirt, it was going to be, excuse me, certified organic. I got it from a local supplier, a company called Fed by Threads. They donate a dollar of every single sale to the food bank. I don't know how many meals they've bought, like 191,000 meals since they started. So they're really integrated in their approach to sustainability. But you're right, it's hard. I talked to Alok, the owner, and to get Made in the USA shirts, he's helping to this woman to start her farm so that she can grow organic, you know, certified organic cotton and on and on. But anyway, I want to go back to something you said about, I think we were in food comas and then we're in fashion comas. So that's coming out. Do you think that women are helping significantly to lead the charge? And it's a no-brainer. Women are the consumers. They make 85% of the decisions. Is that the way that we can help make it the tipping point, get in front of all of the women that buy the fashions for their families and for themselves?
Yeah, well, I think women tend to be more connected to the, an emotional purchase,
right,
than just kind of seeing things on the surface. And I think if you take, two garments and they're competitive and in style and quality and fit and color and comfort and price, which are sort of the driving factors,
right,
for someone to buy a textile, whether it's apparel or home textiles, and then you say to them, okay, give those two textiles, all things equal, one of them is made, using organic and or sustainable materials and manufacturing processes and no child labor and fair trade, which one are you going to buy? I think 100% of those women are going to buy the more sustainable textile, again, without compromising what they want, which is style and quality and price, right?
Right.
So the question isn't why would you buy organic or eco-fashion textiles, it's why wouldn't you? And that's where I think we have to break the stigmas of, that those two worlds are not mutually exclusive. In other words, it's not about style and quality and color and, or being socially and environmentally responsible. It's about having both. The name of the game is a win-win-win paradigm, that the farmers and the factory workers win, that the retailers and the brands and, win,
right,
and that the consumer wins. And we're all in this together, which was really the inspiration for my brand, Under the Canopy. We all live under the canopy of the planet's ecosystem,
right,
together. And so, this is about, a global shift. This, business as usual is no longer working. We have to be building tomorrow's businesses on, the what we call the five P's, people, planet, profit, passion, and purpose, and integrate that, cost is not just about the financial cost of a garment. We have to look at what are those costs to society, to human, to humanity, and to our environment. And good business today is about looking at all of those pillars.
And say the five things again. Say the five P's.
People, planet, profit, passion, and purpose.
Okay.
My favorite quote from Khalil Gibran, the prophet, is work is love made visible. So if you love your work, it's not work, it's love. And I feel, sometimes as an entrepreneur, like a little kid in a candy jar, that, I get to do work that I absolutely love and get to be creative in driving eco-fashion, make a good living and great livelihood doing what I love, and at the same time, change the world. And so, I think this millennial generation is, you can see, again, looking at, social innovation and social entrepreneurship on the rise, and even in the fashion schools that are, from FIT and Parsons to, the fashion institutes all over the country, whereas sustainable fashion used to be maybe a random class from time to time, there are entire tracks dedicated to that category now because it is the way of the future.
That's so awesome. And everybody, I was going to do this when we were halfway through the show. If you have just joined us, it's my pleasure to be interviewing Marcy Zaroff. She is the president of Portico Brands, founder of Under the Canopy, and producer of the documentary Thread. And I want you all to, if you want to check Marcy out, she's got a great page at porticohome.com /WP/content. You can just go to that porticohome.com and look at Marcy's bio, and you'll learn a lot of great things about a woman that's really making a difference for the planet, because that really, really matters. So, Marcy, I have a couple of kind of like personal questions. Two things that I've wanted to ask are, you are really, it's daunting all that you're doing. And I think I'm busy. I think I'm really busy. And I look at the public speaking engagements you take, the companies in which you are involved, the global boards on which you sit. How do you pick and choose? I'm sure you're inundated with requests. What kind of things do you look at before you add another yes to your own personal plate of there are 24 hours a day and sleeping is optional?
Yeah, the blessing and the curse of being an entrepreneur.
Yes.
What they do, right?
Yes.
And I have to say, I mean, to your point, I mean, you know, for so many years, you know, I was really swimming upstream, and it was, you know, a much tougher build, but, you know, it's the 10-year overnight success thing, right?
Now, and I'm only in year seven.
All of the seeds that have been planted are budding, and it is an exciting time. And so, yes, I do step up into a lot of different efforts. In fact, the newest one is Bill McDonough has, you know, with the Cradle to Cradle Institute, has now started a new fashion vertical called the Fashion Positive Project, another exciting effort to transform fashion. But, you know, I think I choose things that are all interconnected. I mean, everything that I'm doing, you know, is supporting something else. And so, you know, they're not, even though there's a lot of different efforts that are on my plate, you know, by being somewhat of a liaison in between a lot of these efforts, we're more efficient. We're not reinventing the wheel from
right.
one effort to another. You know, there's instead of it being, you know, we're all trying to do the same thing with a lot of splintered initiatives. Now the initiatives are coming together, you know, and I'm one of those people that is connecting those dots to create 1 + 1 = 11, you know, where we can, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Right,
right.
So as we tie all of these efforts together, the entire movement is getting stronger and is getting more powerful and is making that much more of a difference. So I just see myself as a, you know, it's always been my calling to be a change maker, and I just see myself as, you know, a conduit in a way for a lot of these efforts. And so I'm grateful. And yes, I work very, very hard, but again, fortunately, you know, I love my work, and, you know, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step, as Lao Tzu once said, and, you know, every step that we're moving is a step in a positive direction.
And I'm sure some days you get up like I do and I say, okay, I can take one step today, which leads to another, which leads to another. And it's interesting because I am in the sixth, seventh year, really later in life, trying to create a global community of people who care, connecting big green dots, putting as big a spotlight on people like you as we possibly can with our small but mighty team. And I want to ask you the other part of that in my breathlessness. What do you do that you love the absolute most, if you could pick? And then what do you do to take care of yourself? What does Marcy do to say, I'm going to be a model of sustainability because I take downtime too?
Well, I mean, I have to say, you know, I'm also a mother. I have two teenagers, and they've been, you know, a source of my inspiration. That, you know, my mission has always been to give consumers products that they love and seek, while making a difference, you know, to human health and the environment and worker welfare, but also to future generations, like our children. And
right.
we have to leave this world as good, if not better, than the way we found it. And so I'm, you know, and I really do believe that we have to teach by example, not by preaching. So walking my talk is always very, very important to me. And so, you know, what do I love? Well, I love to be in a place where I can be a positive role model in the world. You know, you look at what the fashion magazines and the Kim Kardashians of the world, I mean, it's almost, you know, it's embarrassing, right?
It's like, it's disgusting.
Really,
it's really,
I mean, what's happened to people's values, you know? And as a business leader, one thing that I've discovered being in circles of, you know, other thought leaders is that, you know, it's not infrequent that that business leaders have two sets of values. They have their personal values, the things they would never compromise, especially with family and friends, and then they have their professional values, where they almost take on a different rule book. And I think when that disconnect is happening, people aren't comfortable in their own skin because there's a sort of inherent struggle as a human being. And I think at the core of who we all are, we want to do good. We want to be a part of something positive. We want to know that the work that we're doing is not depleting and destroying our planet that we depend on and nature that we're codependent with. I mean, we are part of nature and we are part of this, collective ecosystem. And I think that being a leader, both for women as well as a parent, as well as for, in business, really makes me very happy. And I live every moment, believing that everything happens for reason. Everything is about perception and perspective. So, there are no negatives. There are no bad things. It's all about what do you do with every moment and how do you turn some of these challenges that we see every day into opportunities.
Right.
So to me, there isn't a day that goes by that I'm not learning something new. Even in all the years and over two decades that I've been driving, consumer products that are and movements around sustainability and conscious living. So I'm I wake up and I believe that being in a perpetual state of gratitude, and I'm happily married, and it's all about, love and unity consciousness, really.
What a great story. And there's certainly a lot of spiritual underpinnings to your words and the people that you quote, which is relatable to me. And I think that's another part of this journey where, body, mind, spirit, and the integration of those things. Because sometimes I feel, there's the whole Stepford wife thing, and I go into stores and sometimes I have to leave, I'll be honest with you, because of my walk. And I just see unconscious consumerism. And instead of showing up as judgment, which I never want to do, it's like, it's better if I just don't, if I'm not here right now, when somebody's buying three cases of water bottles, it's like, I have no business saying anything to them. And yet I want to go up and say, do you have any idea the impact that you are making right now on the environment by buying those water bottles? And that's, that sounds preachy, and I don't ever want to do that. So it's like
Buckminster Fuller said, we have to create a new reality that makes the old reality obsolete. And you talk about water bottles, sometimes we have to look at lesser of evils, right? So yes, in an ideal world, there'd be no water bottles, but this is where I love what we're doing in eco fashion around innovation. So one of my favorite innovations is we've figured out a way to turn water bottles into textiles. One of my favorite stories is about, I think it was like 2006-ish, I got a call from Coca-Cola, and they wanted to fly me up to Atlanta to their corporate headquarters and talk to me about sustainability. And everybody in my company was like, why would you do that, Mark? You don't drink Coca-Cola. You haven't had Coca-Cola in over 20 years. You're crazy. I said, you know what? I'm really interested. It's all about collaboration. I want to hear what they have to say. And I was actually really inspired. They said, our goal by 2015 is to take as many, plastic bottles out of the landfills as we possibly can to turn them into textiles. Fast forward all these years later, and there are some amazing efforts going on. There's a company called Unify that has a fiber yarn called Reprieve. And last year, they took 900 million plastic bottles out of our landfills to turn them into yarn. So there's some great stuff going on. We've got Ecolyptus, which is another amazing innovation in fiber, which is taking eucalyptus and extracting the cellulose from eucalyptus and breaking it down with just a non-toxic solvent and turning it into an amazing fiber that's manufactured in what we call a closed-loop system. So there's no waste at all in that manufacturing. It's all the byproducts are used efficiently. And the fiber itself, if people know eucalyptus, it's grown without any water or chemicals. So another great, great innovation in textiles. So, I think we have to be discerning about what we're doing to make that change happen and beware of things like greenwashing, you know, like bamboo.
Right.
Where,
oh my
you know,
gosh.
we were talking about transparency earlier in this call, and you know, there's a lot of people that think bamboo is a sustainable textile or is eco-friendly as a textile, and it's actually not. As flooring or furniture, it's great because you're using the full bamboo, but when you turn it into a textile, you have to break it down with such enormous amounts of chemicals that all that's left are traces of bamboo. And so the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has actually slapped lawsuits on a number of major companies to force them to stop marketing bamboo as sustainable as a textile. So, you know, it's, you know, this, we still have a long way to go in this industry, but education is so important, and that's one of the reasons we're making the Thread documentary and driving fashion forward, is to, you know, to help people understand, you know, how important authenticity is.
And it's the blessing of, excuse me again, the times in which we live, to me, because I think social media can be the most powerful ally, especially when you talk about young kids. I'm one of those people that I love Instagram. I love the messages, and it's blowing up, and Facebook and Twitter, there's ways to send really good messaging to that generation and really get them engaged. So that's one of the things that gives me a lot of hope. What about going back to Fashion Revolution Day on April 24th? What are you going to be doing? You yourself.
Yeah, so first of all, Under the Canopy made these wonderful certified organic, made in the USA t-shirts that are going to be on Modavanti.com. As of, I believe, on Tuesday, they'll be available, and they'll launch on Earth Day. So they say, you know, who made your clothes? And again, made in the USA, in a solar-powered factory, all geothermal, all seaweed-based dyes, so, you know, really high-quality, chemical-free t-shirts, really cute design. And so we're working at Union Square in New York City to educate consumers about Fashion Revolution Day on Earth Day. We have a table in Union Square. Come visit us. And then on Fashion Revolution,
I wish I could come visit you.
And then there are all kinds of events going on. There are some stores doing events. And just, we're all out there creating awareness. There's an Inside Out contest. You know, wear your clothes inside out, and hashtag Inside Out. And then the winner will get thousands of dollars worth of free gifts. So again, we're just out there, all the brands and all the champions and bloggers that are joining this movement, fashionrevolution.org, and it's at fash_rev USA, you know, just to join us and be a part of this change. And as you mentioned earlier, another one of my favorite quotes, be the change you wish to see in the world, which is, you know, Gandhi can't say it any better than that, right?
I know, no kidding. It's really, I mean, you give me hope. And I think that's really it. We live in this world, I do, where I'm surrounded by great guests like you, and I do research about wonderful thought leaders going forward for, you know, the future and preserving our future and making changes. And then sometimes I say I go out in the real world and it's like, what? What? Look at that line at that fast food place. And I was really offended last night. We picked my daughter up at the airport. And when I say offended, I actually mean that. There was a big billboard, and it was done by McDonald's, and I have no hesitation to say it whatsoever. And it said, it had three different sodas on it and a cheeseburger, three different sodas, like in an iced tea, and it said, climate control. And I thought, how dare you? How dare you send that message? And it's things like that that keep me strong and want me to keep going. So we have about 2 minutes left, maybe three. What else do you want to share with us? What else do you want to celebrate? I celebrate you and thank you for being on the show again and for doing what you're doing. I hope our paths cross. When are you going to do a TEDx talk if you haven't already? That's got to be on the list, like you haven't done enough. So let's this last 2 minutes with Marcy Zaroff be all about you.
Oh, sweet. I mean, you know, for me, again, you know, I think we all just need to come together and ask that question, you know, what's inside my clothes, who made my clothes, and be a part of this change. You know, check out, definitely go check out the Driving Fashion Forward videos or short films
right.
at Lexus. LStudio.com. You know, visit me at MarcyZeroff.com. I'm on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Pinterest. And so, you know, follow me on the social channels to see what else I'm doing. We're going to have a whole new website up soon with Under the Canopy in Portico. So it's behind the scenes being created right now. And then go visit all those sites to look at all the great clothing that exists out there, you know, and
I hope people do because they're fun.
Yeah.
They're fun. They're hip. They're engaging. They draw you in. I mean, the fashionrevolutionusa.org, you just want to keep clicking because it's really, really, really fun and informative and I hope a force to be reckoned with. So thank you, Marcy, and I hope our paths cross again in person. Thanks for everything you do for the planet and everybody. Happy Earth Day. Celebrate Mother Earth in a meaningful, intentional way and make it a great green day. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.